This is Fam Electric Ghost, and we're live on the air on Facebook, YouTube, and Twitch. For some reason, let me see, they were having an issue. I'm going to try to fix that. Oh, there's an issue with going live on Twitch right now, but we'll go deal with that later. So, again, welcome to the Fam Electric Ghost podcast. You are a podcaster yourself. Your podcast is called Please Me. And we're going to talk to you about everything that you like to talk about. But one of the first things I like to ask a guest is, like, one of the things I like to ask is, why do you do what you do and what motivates you?
Absolutely. Well, I am by profession a licensed physical therapist, and I've treated all conditions in my physical therapy practice over the years. I've been a therapist for over 20 years, and recently, I've become a pelvic floor physical therapist, which treats conditions of the pelvic floor and sexual health conditions. And my main focus is sexual health. And what motivates me is that oftentimes I have clients who will come to me and say, here I am for erectile dysfunction treatment, and I need your help. However, my partner doesn't know I'm here, you know, and it could be a wife or a girlfriend, and they are not talking to their partners about their issues or about seeking help for their issues. And so I often say that there is absolutely no shame in seeking help for sexual health conditions. And so I started the podcast. One of the reasons was to, really open up conversations about sexual health and sexuality in general, because it's so stigmatized and there's so much shame around sexuality and sex that people are just not comfortable having these conversations. And so they're waiting really long to get treatment, and that, causes their issues to be more severe, and, they're not getting the treatment that they need early on to really mitigate the problem. So that's what motivates me, among a lot of other things, but helping women also is a motivator as well, to really, get their needs met. And so we'll probably go into that, because you'll ask me about the orgasm gap. So I won't jump into that just yet. But that is another thing that really, motivates me as well.
Did you find it was difficult to get any, I know something we were talking about, the whole stigma, there's a stigma around sexuality. And when you want to talk about it, have you found like that you get censored or you get edited or get restricted through algorithms through the internet? Because I've found in some cases, when I've done episodes or I've done work as a musician that addresses sexuality, sometimes the algorithms like stop you from reaching as many people. Have you found issues with that?
Yes, actually. And actually, a lot of people that I know that are sort of talking about these things more often frequently get their Instagram profiles completely eliminated, like out of the blue, or, Facebook or wherever they're sharing information. And so a lot of times you'll see that when they're posting, they'll spell sex with like a weird character as the E. I've actually started doing that myself. That way, the words are not picked up as easily. And so, yes, absolutely. Censorship is something that I've found. I've tried getting funding. I tried getting funding through Kickstarter, and they didn't like the fact that I was talking about sexuality. It's not something that they, do. So
it's so frustrating, because it's like it's human health. And then there's so many people in so many corners that want to just like put a lot of shame to it, put a lot of, make people feel embarrassed. And, it's something that we should be able to freely talk about. We should have our First Amendment rights. And then we've got algorithms and we've got AI. I'm a tech person, but I've been very frustrated with what I've seen happen with some of these technologies. They restrict people. They talk about what's going to help people, and then they go and it just automatically restricts it. And then there's like no way to override it, right? There's no way to appeal it, because, that's what the computer does.
Right.
But that's not, we're living in a world with human beings, and we need to be able to talk about human issues. But one of the things I wanted to get into is like, what made you want to, you know, tackle this topic in, like, in your life? Maybe tell your story of like what made it important to you to talk about it.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely. I will get into some of my history here. So by the age of 10 or 11, I had been sexually abused by 5 people. And so I had a very early lesson about sexuality and not a healthy one. And so it really took me on a journey of healing throughout my life. And I feel like I'm finally at the place where I am, you know, fully, because it kind of stunts your growth in a way, you know, yeah. And so, you know, you kind of, that inner child in you is always sort of like suffering in silence. Right. And it teaches you that you don't have boundaries around your body. And so learning all of that and unlearning all of that, I should say, took me on a very long journey. And I at this point in my life, I really feel like that part of the healing process is behind me. And now I can sort of share everything that I've learned along the way to help other people. So, you know, that really is something that motivates me as well.
Yeah, it seems like I've talked to a lot of people that have gone through trauma and then they want to end up becoming like teachers.
Yes.
Or therapists.
Absolutely.
Because I think it helps you work through, because like a lot of times when you have issues with trauma, it's like, it's always there. Like you can get past it, but you have to like, and if you go into like a healing or a therapeutic or teaching type of thing, you learn how to express, you know, constant healing or constant
absolutely
awareness, where a lot of people think, well, I'm going to get past it. Well, you know, a lot of things in life, they're always there. And it's like, you have to learn how to kind of address it. And
it's,
I think
it's like an onion, right? You like, so you heal the first layer, then you heal the second layer, then you heal the third layer. And honestly, I feel like just having done my podcast for the past, it's been a little bit less than a year, maybe 10 months or so. I feel like that journey has been a healing journey because I have so many coaches and so many people on there that have done, have their own healing that have really helped me to see things in different perspectives that, you know, exactly, that I would not have had the opportunity to do. And so that has been another layer of healing for me as well. So yes, I mean, that the reason why I wanted to get into sexual health is because after being in a sexless marriage for, you know, 8 years, it wasn't sexless the whole time, but for many of the years it was, you know, and coming out of that, being, you know, having been, or am, I am a very sexual person and sensual person, and not allowing myself to express that during my marriage, you know, when I came out of that situation, I was ready to really explore, and explore I did. And I, you know, entered into a lot of situations that most people will probably never find themselves in, but I was exploring, I was learning myself, and I was learning what I liked and didn't like. And in that experience, I learned to voice what I wanted and what I needed. And I think that that is such an important skill for all people to have, and women especially, to get their needs met. So, you know, that really motivates me to talk about these things.
Yeah. In society, there's a lot of like stigma, but also like social mores and, you know, ethics that are kind of controlled by, you know, religion and culture. That what I've seen over time, that they really limit the concept of women being allowed to speak out what you just talked about. There's some, you know, societal structures that don't feel that women should have the rights they to pleasure or to express it. That's somehow not part of the culture. And it's really, you know, frustrating, I think, for people who are in those cultures or in those systems to kind of break out of it. It's kind of like breaking out of a codependency. Like, what if you're, the society you're in has that, you know, you have a microcosm level and you have a macrocosm level. If you're in a society that says that, well, women shouldn't feel that or should be allowed to that, even if you're in a bad relationship. Like the overall society or structure is preventing all the women from expressing that. So that to me is a really big problem. We even have it in the States today. There's a lot of people that have a point of view that's very restrictive.
Absolutely. I mean, societally, all over the world, really, women's issues are, you know, being tamped down. Our rights are being taken away. And it's very scary times, you know. And so it's important to have people speaking out about these sorts of issues because, you know, we all need to be represented. And yes, absolutely. You know, I talk about, you know, relationship anarchy often, you know, and, you know, throwing all of those societal norms out the window and trying to decide for ourselves what we really want for ourselves, what kind of life we want to create for our own personal selves. And it could look different from everybody else's around you. And that's okay, as long as the people that are in that relationship are, you know, consenting and happy with the decisions that they've made regarding the relationship. You know, anything is possible. So, you know, societally, I think we have a long way to go to really support women in not just our health, because, you know, sexual health is another main thing that has been really, you know, difficult for women to get help, and especially women, you know, that are in the minority as well, you know, that then the issues become even more difficult to get help for. So, you know, oftentimes women will go to the doctor and they'll say, it's all in your head, you know, and, you know, we get that, you know, all the time, you know, and it's like, hello, I know myself more than anybody else, you know, respect that I am the master of me and know everything about myself, and I'm coming to you for help. So don't just push me away or my, you know, situation away because you're not comfortable with the topics that we're talking about. And, you know, oftentimes even in healthcare, you get that pushback.
Yeah. Well, healthcare is a big problem today because, you know, you got some doctors that will actually push their religion over their practice.
Right.
So if you,
and that's not what you're going to the doctor for, you know what I mean?
I'm paying for a service.
Right.
If I'm paying for a service, like your religious point of view, that's fine. But like, if I'm paying as a medical professional, you should address the issues and not throw your lens on it and decide what you're going to do for the patient or not do for the patient or what you think is that has no place to me. And in a modern society, and it's like, it's very strange to me, you know, being a child of the 70s and kind of growing up with, you know, the 60s, the, you know, the liberation movements of the 60s, it seemed like this whole like backlash against all that and people trying to push it down and trying to bring us back to like the 1700s in terms of like, there are people talking about laws that are from like 1770, 1780 and right, trying to apply it to modern society. Mm-hmm. And that's ridiculous, you know, because everybody should have freedom. And if we talk about that, we should have freedom. And then certain groups are like, oh, well, that goes against, you know, my religious freedom is more important than your overall freedom. So I have a freedom to discriminate because that my religion tells me I can discriminate. And I'm like, how does that balance out?
Exactly. The people are using, you know, whatever avenue they can to make their point, you know, and when they can take historical information and warp it, you know, and, you know, add it to, you know, their argument, they think that it makes them seem more relevant. But yeah. You have to look at all of the details and all of the facts before you listen or believe anything that you hear.
Yeah, because it's very, very top down. Mm-hmm. From the Supreme Court to legislatures to going and, you know, legislating your body.
Yes.
And a lot of men, you know, might not, well, it's not them, but like, if you have a partner, if you have a wife, if you know women in your life, you should wake up and like, would you want someone telling you what you can do? And it's like, where's the empathy for men and, you know, to understand that doesn't seem just. So I'm just giving my on my kind of high horse there, but
I totally agree with you. Mm-hmm. I agree. I mean, men have to step up and help to support. Right, men have to step up and support their wives, their girlfriends, their sisters, their mothers, their children. You know, their girl children that are going to grow up and be teenagers, and then young adults that are going to, you know. They should want to those women in their lives to have the right to their own body. And if you look at the history of, you know, we're talking about abortion rights, I mean, kind of, you know, around the, so let's just get into it, right? So abortion rights, and if you look at the history of abortion rights and you look at medically, just medically, not even like the legality of anything, but just medically what went on when abortions were not legal, almost every single hospital in the country had an abortion wing. And that was to treat people, women who had had illegal abortions and were dying from them. You know, they had an entire wing. Yeah. And so this is a massive women's health issue, you know? So, you know, people are not really considering
it's not just
that.
It's not just like the Comstock rule and these moral people with like, they're putting their morality or their ethics and not looking at medically necessary situations where you have situations that has nothing to do with some kind of morality issue of like what person has done personally in their life. It's none of your business anyway, but right. there are medically necessary situations that the religious texts don't address. Right. And so religious texts don't address medically, scientifically necessary things necessary for your survival. And so that to me is a total disconnect when people do things that have like, well, what is the business of some group that does not have anything to do with a person or, a family structure, and they're making a decision for that family, that couple, that woman. Why was it their right to go and do that? They would, you know, if you think about it, like with men, it's like, are you like men have all these like, sexual erectile dysfunction. You see blue pills on TV all day.
Right.
You can talk about that all day. You can't talk about women's issues at all.
Yeah.
If somebody wants to go complain and censor it and turn it off. That's very one-sided. And I think people need to just be more adult and more respectful of other people, of women. I think it's overall just respect for humanity.
Absolutely. I mean, we do make up half of the population, so we're human too, right? You know, so absolutely, I agree with that.
And when we start talking about sexual issues, like you get into like concepts of like your big clit energy or orgasm gap, orgasm revolution, people get really uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
Certain people. And, you know, just me bringing that up might have this episode restricted in some places. But that to me is so ridiculous. So we'll just tackle that on right now. It's like,
sure.
If we get into that concept of, you know, sexual liberation at first, you know, we'll dive into all the other subtopics of what that means for women from your perspective. And maybe you can kind of start there and then we'll dive into the other topics.
Yeah. So, I mean, sexual liberation is, you know, feeling confident in your sexuality. And so I often talk about big clit energy, right? And you just mentioned that, and, you know, big dick energy has been, you know, that term has been flying around, you know, the internet and everywhere for years, right? This is like constant and completely acceptable, you know, and it's the confidence that a man has to, live their lives when they are confident in their sexuality, right? So the woman's equivalent of that is big clit energy, right? Because the clit or the clitoris is equivalent to the man's penis. So, so I coined that term, big clit energy, because women do have a confidence too when they feel sexually liberated or sexually free. And that does translate to other areas of your life, just like big dick energy does, right? When you have that confidence in yourself and in your sexuality, it translates into the confidence that you have, you know, in general, in the board meetings, in, you know, your job, in all of the aspects of your life. And so I think it's important for people to seek and try to gain that confidence in their sexuality. And it's a process, you know, just like anything else. But, you know, having that as a goal, I think is, you know, really a great way to help women to really better understand themselves.
Well, there's a lot of pillars to a human being. I mean, a lot of times we talk about spiritual, mental, physical, you know, in the heart, but then people get scared to talk about sex, the sexual right. part of that pillar. I mean, every time I've talked to a lot of therapists, some of them will mention the sexual pillar, but a lot of them don't, because mm-hmm. they're probably scared of what we've been talking about. Because like once you bring that up, then you kind of trigger certain people. Certain people get so triggered, like, you know, if you think about the hip hop or music industry, like the big dick energy has been all over that.
Right.
And it's been very sexist and very, anti-women in a lot of the expression in there. And that's been fine. That's been fine for people to do that in a very sexist way. But if a woman comes and starts to go from that big clit energy, then people suddenly have a problem. They start making all kinds of comments. And in the music industry, I've seen it. It's like, what is that? What is the problem? If somebody is confident in their sexuality, Mick Jagger can be super confident in sexuality, say all these things in the Rolling Stones songs, and nobody mentioned anything about it. Go read the lyrics.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And then if a woman like a Liz Phair was a famous indie, you know, musician, she started coming at it. She actually created Exile in Guyville, which was like a response to Exile in Main Street from a woman's point of view. And she's very, you know, big clit energy all over that record.
Right.
And some people had a problem, you know, with her approach mm-hmm. and they didn't know what to do with her. But, you know, a lot of other critics like, wow, that's really relative, you know, really a revelation. It's like, well, you didn't think it was a big deal when Big Jagger was doing it. How come it's a big deal if a woman artist does it?
Right. You women know? Get shamed for things like that all the time. And even, you know, athletes, you know, get shamed for their bodies yeah. when they are, you know, gymnasts. You know, I've seen some ads, you know, how the gymnastics outfits were like inappropriate in some way. Okay, well, maybe the lighting hit them differently and you could, you know, maybe see a nipple through the fabric or, right. you know, their mons through the fabric or whatever. Give me a break. We all have bodies. Like, why are nipples offensive? Like, why is a woman's body offensive? They have clothing on. There's absolutely nothing offensive about it. And you're absolutely right. Women are constantly being shamed for, you know, not being quote unquote pure. When really, when you think about sexuality, it's a gift, in my opinion, from our higher power. You know what I mean?
It's a creation gift. I mean, it's part of the creation, but then you make it dirty. You
right.
make it, and it's very contradictory mm-hmm. because the female power of creation, like the ability of women to have that creativity, you know, men are always trying to talk about, you know, creativity in the Victorian era. They were talking about, you know, talking about the little death and the talking about from, you know, orgasms, you know, being very powerful and creative thought. All the Victorian poets were Lord Byron, Tennyson, they're all talking about it. But if a woman wanted to bring up like that in terms of like the big clit version of that, well, nobody wants to talk about it. Whether you're talking about the little death all over the place, that's a male orgasm. That's all over Victorian classic canon literature.
And that's why many women, you know, wrote under, you know, these ghost names because they couldn't express themselves, you know, and the only way that they could do that was by writing under a different name.
Yeah, it's very, you know, you get Mary Shelley and Frankenstein, and like all that power of her creation of that concept, you know, you know, it's very rare that during that time that you get somebody to come up, you know, to actually use their name. But, you know, just the confidence of being able to express that sexuality and the creation power, you know, to me is like, I talk to a lot of creative people and I've tended to talk to a lot of women creators because I don't think they get enough attention. So on my podcast over the years, I've talked to a lot of women who are creatives because I felt like a lot of the men were getting too much attention. And so I felt like I needed to have a forum where I talk to other people who aren't, you know, always the same group of people always being talked to. And it's just like, why is that a problem to, you know, get, you know, like if you talk to the alpha male, like you get all this attention, but if you want to talk to an alpha female, then you have a problem. People get offended by what they say and their points of view. And it's really, you know, maybe we can talk more about, you know, you coined the term, the big clit energy, but with also the orgasm gap.
Yes.
You know, it's like men are always talking about that, you know, in hidden ways or coded ways in a lot of their work. Being women try to talk about it and like what's the result.
Yeah. So the orgasm gap is a phenomenon where, you know, men are getting their needs met. Let's say, you know, there's many statistics depending on the type of relationship, but let's just go with like a coupled relationship that, you know, that men and women are in a relationship. So, so 95% of men get their needs met when it comes to sexuality, right? Meaning that they have an orgasm and only about 56% of women do. And so in every heterosexual relationship, every single one, not, I mean, I'm not talking about particular people, but like generally, right? In heterosexual relationships, generally, okay, whether it be marriage all the way to hookup sex, the orgasm gap exists. And that's because what we see in the media is penetrative sex always. It's very rare that you see things that actually help to make a woman climax. And so people don't understand that, you know, penetration alone is not something that's going to get a woman to climax. And so this orgasm gap exists and persists because we continuously see that in porn, in the media, on shows, you know, everywhere, right? And so talking about it to me is so important because we have to be able to close that orgasm gap. You know, why is it fair that men are up here in the 95th percentile and women are only down here in the 56th percentile? Why is that fair? You know, it doesn't seem fair to me, you know? So part of one of the things that I talk about a lot in my podcast is closing that orgasm gap by education, by awareness, and by teaching women how to hone their own sexual energy so that they can close that orgasm gap one person at a time.
But that also does go to like being able to voice what you want. Because if you're like, if you're in a societal moray where it's always like penetration sex, and then you don't feel comfortable voicing, well, that's not enough for me. I need something else. Like, so if you can't voice what you want, it maybe that's cultural or that's societal is like told you like, well, that's, you know, sex is supposed to only be about procreation, or sex is only supposed to be this and supposed to be that. It's supposed to only be about pleasing the man. So if you have that mindset, you don't even think to say that I should feel good myself or I should want what I want. You're kind of subjugating what you want for the needs of the other person.
You know, everybody has different views about sexuality. And, you know, my personal view is that sex is how adults play. This is our playground, right? And so if you are not enjoying it, you're not doing it right. If you're only doing it for procreation, you're not going to enjoy it very much. You know what I mean? And we as humans, no matter what country we're from, are wired for pleasure. Mm-hmm. We are wired for pleasure, head to toe. There are nerve endings on our body, on our skin, that help us to feel pleasure. And I'm not just talking about erotic pleasure or, you know, pleasure of the genital area or, you know, erogenous zones. I'm talking about your entire body is wired for pleasure, your skin. You know, there are pleasure receptors on your entire body. And so we were created for it. So if you are tamping down that, you know, part of your body to please someone else, or because you're too embarrassed, or there's shame around it, or your religion says that it's not okay, or your society says that it's not okay, just know that your body was wired for pleasure and you were made this way by whoever, whatever divine, you know, or not, you know, however you want to think about it. You know, for me, I believe that our higher power gave us our bodies, right? The way that they are. And we should be able to enjoy them, you know? And in order to do that, you really need to know how to pleasure yourself. And that's very important.
And I think it's like to a point where like the shame factor, like if you're taught from your, you know, beginning in your family microcosm structure that, you know, pleasuring yourself, whether you're male or female, that that's wrong.
Right.
And you're never going to go there. Right.
A lot of people have that as their history. Tons of people do. And so to get over that, you really have to make a conscious effort.
Yeah. Cause it's a hard thing. Cause like that you're kind of been programmed, and not that you can't reprogram. We've talked to tons of therapists.
Right. It's a mindset thing.
Mm-hmm. Getting out of reprogramming of the, you know, getting out of the imposter syndrome. It's the same type of thing. Like if you've been told to be very restrictive, very conservative when it comes to like pleasuring yourself. And I mean, a lot of people, like if I deal with a lot of musicians and creatives, and we get pleasure by playing our instruments. So we can say that like we can get into a zone that's very similar. You know, a lot of musicians will tell you that they have kind of orgasmic moments when they're in kind of that flow state, right? When they allow themselves to get into that flow state, it's the same kind of thing that you can do with like the pleasuring state. It's in the same place.
It's all about energy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's that energy where you get connected and you feel that connection to that frequency. The frequencies, you know, we're full of frequencies. And when you start to hone in on those frequencies that trigger like results, then you figure it out. Like, oh, wow. Like you get in tune. You can get in tune with yourself. You can get in tune with the universe and get in tune with somebody else, where you can be dissonant, or you can be kind of in a noise place where you're not in harmony. You know, and being a musician, I kind of talk in those terms, but it's similar concepts.
Right. Absolutely. I mean, I can relate that towards, you know, sexuality and sex, where you want to be in harmony with your partner, right? So that you can both have a pleasurable experience. And if you're out of, you know, sync or out of rhythm, right, it's not going to feel as good, right?
Yeah, again, that dissonance, you're in that noise, you're like discordant, like what we call discordance, right? And sometimes you're in a song, you can have discordant moments. But overall, eventually there's stuff that comes into harmony or rhythm or in synchronization or in tune. It's like, so sometimes you're not always going to be in tune. Sometimes they're going to be discordant because you're going to have an argument, or you're going to have a disagreement, or you're not going to be on the same page. But at some point, if it's going to work, there has to be some level of harmonization.
Yes. And communication is so key. Like you said earlier, communication is something I constantly talk about on the podcast as well.
You know, it's really interesting at the beginning. Yeah. You told me about partners coming to you that didn't, you know, people come to you and didn't tell their partner about their sexual dysfunction, which is
they may know about the sexual dysfunction, but they don't know that their partner is getting treated for it because they're ashamed of it.
Mm. So that connection is like, you really need, that's like the core of like the relationship is like if you're disconnected, if you're not really like, you know, in sync or in kind of, you know, you're not talking about your needs. Like the person that never says, you know, that wasn't good for me, that kind of lies and says that it is. Well, that's not really helping your relationship to keep that going that way.
100%.
Right?
I mean, 80% of women at some point in their lives have faked orgasm. You know, that's what you're talking about right now. Not telling people your true feelings. you know, and not sharing that. And so how could sex ever get better if you're always faking it? You're basically training your partner to do things you don't like, you know? So don't fake it out there, people.
Getting along, get along to go along, you know, like that doesn't really work. And eventually it's going to fall apart. And so it's really important to have these kind of conversations, but so many people want to shut them down because, like, is really the shutdown because of the shame or because of the embarrassment, or is it because of like some outside influence saying that, oh, it's not part of the social contract to behave that way?
I mean, it's all of the above, right? It's like there's so many different things that come into play when it comes to shame because it's so multi-layered. I mean, it's your family, it's the society, it's your religion, it's, you know, other people, other, you know, peers, you know, that see you doing something that they may deem inappropriate and shame you for that, you know? So it could be coming really from anywhere. But it's very prevalent. And one of the things that I'm really trying to fight against and to destigmatize the conversations around sex and to, you know, really look at that shame and say, why do I have this shame? And when people really start to look at it, they're like, you know what? This is not serving me in any way, shape, or form. This feeling has got to go so that I can enjoy my life. I mean, and shame is around a lot of different things. It's not just around sexuality, but that's one of the big ones, you know? But, you know, feeling shame for various things, you know, it's not helping us in any way. So how can we get rid of that shame and really focus on what's going to make us happy?
Yeah, it's like being a people pleaser. It doesn't necessarily, you know, help you.
That's a whole other thing. Yeah,
it's another level. But I think a lot of people get stuck in that kind of mindset.
Yeah.
Also, like, you know, it giving power to somebody else, right? You give power to an ideology that says that you can't be happy, and you think that's just. Well, that's in self. Like, that's a real big concept. That's a big hang up. Like, if you can't get outside of you got to get to the point, like, can I still be in my religion and pleasure myself? Can I work that out? Or do I have to, like, move on? Or is, like, so everybody has to probably figure that out for themselves, whatever
Absolutely. Religion they're in.
And, mm-hmm. and that could be a big hang up that could take a lot of work to get through.
And if you've been through any kind of healing journey, right, you know that it is a lot of work. It's not like instantaneously like, oh, I want to get rid of this shame. Okay, bye-bye. It's gone. No, it takes work. It takes time. It takes you working on yourself and working through the issues that you're having to really get, you know, to the other side of that healing to feel like you can, you know, have experiences without the shame constantly being the biggest thing in your mind, right? And I'm gonna be honest, you know, there's plenty of times when I still am having, you know, sexual relations and you know, negative thoughts enter my mind from my past experiences that I need to, you know, sort of center myself and bring myself to the present and push those thought processes mm-hmm. away. And that's very common for people who have had, you know, sexual abuse in their past. Or any other kind of trauma, right? That it kind of enters into your mind at the least appropriate times, right? You just don't want it there, but it's there. So, you know, it is really common and it takes time and it is a journey and it is a process.
So in terms of dealing with people's individual sexual like issues and then like couple kind of therapy, like if you've got a couple, and you've got an individual that have their own like issues, I would think I've talked to lots of therapists, you kind of have to resolve your core issue before you can kind of actually like love yourself before you can love somebody else. Is that kind of the deal, or do you need to actually involve your partner in the relation in the healing at some point?
So we're talking about like, you know, psychotherapy or like, healing journey in that way with getting help through like a social worker, or a psychologist or something like that? Is that what you're going with right now? Because I'm a physical therapist, so I treat conditions that are very physical, right? I'm a physical therapist. So I'm treating the conditions of the body that are actually problematic because of a physical problem. So, you know, when a couple, or typically it's an individual, comes to me to see me, I, you know, talk to them about the physical problem. So with erectile dysfunction, the physical problem for erectile dysfunction is blockages in the arteries. Okay, so erectile dysfunction can be caused by various things, right? It's not just a physical problem. It also can be a mental problem. There's other things that play into it, right? But the physical part of it is the part that I treat. And I know there are blockages in the penis that are caused by plaque buildup over the years. And this is completely common for men and women. I mean, 20% of men in their 20s have some form of erectile dysfunction, and then it goes up 10% per decade. So 30% in their 30s, 40% in their 40s, 50% in their 50s. It's extremely, extremely common, and people aren't talking about it. And for women, there's an equivalent issue, and it's called decreased vaginal sensitivity and dryness. And that's how, you know, our bodies manifest with the same type of plaque blockages. And so there is treatment for that. There is gold standard treatment for that called acoustic wave therapy. And that is the type of treatment that I do in my practice to help people with their physical problems, you know. And of course, all of the other stuff comes up, you know, at the same time while we're getting the treatment for that. The other stuff comes up too. And often I will refer patients to, you know, other people when they need help in those other arenas.
That's really interesting about the acoustic wave therapy, because everybody hears about erectile dysfunction like every 5 minutes on the commercials on TV. But I don't think I've ever heard about acoustic wave therapy as an ad for a process or of treatment of male, of female, you know, dysfunction. Like, no, I never see any ads for any type of medications or processes or therapies for that at all. So it's totally male one-sided.
As always. Yes.
And like, what is that?
Right. And you know, we have issues too, you know, with the same blood flow issues. Both of those conditions are treated, but you're absolutely right. Erectile dysfunction gets a lot of, you know, press, right? It's constantly being talked about. And, you know, the treatment for that is often throwing medication at it, you know, and those medications are very dangerous. I mean, if you have a heart condition, and erectile dysfunction is a precursor to heart disease. Okay. So if you have erectile dysfunction, you might be developing heart disease and don't even know it. It's a precursor. So I always say to my, you know, patients that come to see me to, you know, go see their cardiologist to make sure that there's nothing going on, blockages in and around their heart that could possibly cause a heart attack down the road or a stroke, you know? So, you know, that is constantly being talked about. And the treatment for it that, you know, most doctors will give them is, you know, the little blue pill, which unfortunately is just a Band-Aid. It's not actually doing anything for the blockages. It's just creating the blood flow for a portion of time, you know, while it's in your system. But once it goes away, guess what? Those blockages are still there. There's nothing that has been done to kind of mitigate that or help that to go away. And so over time, people find that when they're taking those medications, that they stop to work, because those blockages get worse and worse, and then they get blocked fully. And then there's no blood flow happening. And so then the penis can't get erect. And then that's when I start to see patients come to see me. And this is already when the issues are severe, you know? And so when you want to get treatment is when the issues are in the mild state, you know, because that's when you're going to have the most effect. And yes, they can get better if they're severe, but it's going to take a lot more treatments and a lot more time. And potentially, they may not get to the point where they, you know, restore full function. And what we want is to stay fully functioning throughout our whole lives, right? So thinking about, you know, how to treat those conditions if you are experiencing those conditions early on.
Is it the same issue for acoustic wave therapy? Is that something for women? Does that solve a? Is that more a full solution, or is that more of like a band-aid type of solution too?
No, acoustic wave therapy is an actual treatment for improving blood flow to the area, whether it be a man or a woman. So what it does is the treatment itself was used to break up kidney stones before, right? Mm. So it breaks up the blockages in your arteries. And over time, you know, when you've gotten multiple treatments, your arteries start to have much better blood flow. And another one of the things that it does is it creates more capillary formation. So capillaries are the tiny little blood vessels that permeate every tissue of your body. It's how your body gets nutrients to the tissue so that, you know, your cells can be healthy and all of that. So, so either way, whether you're a woman or a man, acoustic wave therapy is going to help unblock the tissue or unblock the blockages and help to create more blood flow by creating more capillaries over time. So it's used to treat both erectile dysfunction and decreased vaginal sensitivity and dryness.
Wow, that sounds like a lot more like holistic, or really getting to the source instead of a band-aid. Like, I don't know, modern society always tends to go with band-aids.
Like, I mean, that's the whole medical system, right? give it a pill, give me a pill for this. I just need it to be fixed. It's like, no, look at what you're doing to your body, you know, and look at what you're doing to create this disease, because a lot of our diseases are preventable. Most of them are.
So you're getting to the root cause, because like when somebody comes to you, you might find out there's other things going on. And so you're looking at the holistic solution where I'm sure you're going to go through a lot more, like maybe diet, exercise.
Absolutely.
Other things that are deeper than what tends to be like the quick fix. I always want the pill. Right. I just want the shot.
And people don't want to change their diets, right? God forbid you to take away my hamburgers or whatever it is, you know? People don't want to change their diets, but nutrition is 80% of health. You know,
yeah, I would think that's a lot. Like, I wanted to get into that. Like with like the high fat, red meat, you know, French fries, processed foods, that's not probably helping you in this area at all, right?
No. And when you think about health, like I said, 80% of health is nutrition. The other 20% is getting enough sleep, drinking enough water, and exercising regularly. So exercise falls in that 20%. And a lot of people don't realize that. They think, oh, let me just go exercise and that's going to like solve all my problems. Well, it will solve some of them, but 80% of health is nutrition, what you put in your body. And not a lot of people are focused on that. And for women and men, really, women should have between 7 to 13 servings and men should have between 9 to 13 servings of fruits and vegetables per day. And this is what cleanses our body. This is what gives our body nutrition. This is what gives our cells the nutritional building blocks to be healthy. And so if you're not getting proper nutrition, you're not going to be healthy in all aspects of your life, including your sexuality. So yes, I do look at a very holistic approach when I have patients come to me. I'm also a certified health coach, and I look at, you know, their nutrition. I give them tips and tricks on, you know, what to do to help increase that blood flow nutritionally. And I really encourage people to eat more fruits and vegetables. And so I talk about a supplement that, you know, gives them the nutrition of 30 fruits and vegetables in their body every single day, because it really does help to bridge the gap between what they do eat and what they should eat.
Yeah, because LeVar kind of a, you know, quick, you know, junk food, fast food culture, you're not getting, you know, those fruits and vegetables at the level that you need to. And then people just don't feel the importance of it. And I think, like, if you go to a primary care doctor, a lot of times they throw the pill at you, or they throw the, you know, those things at you instead of telling you, well, maybe you need to, you know, adjust your diet.
Unfortunately, diet, you know, doctors do not have much nutritional training in medical school. They have a lot of training for other stuff. You know, I'm not saying that they don't know anything. I mean, they do get a lot of training for other stuff, but they get very, very little for nutrition. And if they only did get more training for nutrition, they would, you know, be talking about what Hippocrates was talking about, right? Where food is medicine, you know, and they would be prescribing food instead of prescribing pills, you know, but doctors don't know enough to do that. You know, they just don't.
Yeah, I got to go to a holistic or doctor or nutritionist to actually discover, you know, you got to get the processed food down. I've talked, you know, I could jump on that. But once you have all your pillars, like in terms of your nutrition, your exercise, you kind of got to clear that imposter syndrome, these other things, mental blocks out of the way, because that's in there too. And I might have to, you might have to talk to somebody else for that. But when you get to the idea of the orgasm revolution, and you've talked to like maybe your female patients, maybe you can tell some stories about like lessons learned about that type of the whole concept of the orgasm revolution and how people should, you know, approach that.
So the orgasm revolution is actually a revolution that I started in February, and I'll explain what it is to you so that you know what it is. So basically it's bringing awareness to the orgasm gap. And so through education and through awareness. And so I've been talking about it a lot on my podcast, and I've been posting about it a lot on my, you know, social media feeds. And to join the orgasm revolution, you basically what it is just bringing awareness to the orgasm gap so that we can close the gap one person at a time through awareness and education. And so that's basically what the orgasm revolution is. And so how people join the revolution is by getting a t-shirt that says orgasm equality, which I have on my website, or posting, you know, an orgasm equality sign on your social media. And then basically bringing awareness to what the orgasm gap is in your own words, you know, and telling people why you think it's important. And the more people that do that, you know, over time, the more the revolution is going to grow. And so I invite anybody listening to go to pleaseme.online and join the revolution.
It's more like a social like campaign to get people like awareness so that it becomes like less stigmatized or becomes more talked about. So then you can actually address it and start to, you know, feel comfortable to talk to your partner, think that kind of idea that you're going to make it something that people don't feel.
Yeah. So some people will listen to this and say, right. Some people will listen to this and say, you know what? I have an orgasm gap myself. You know, I don't always have an orgasm when I have sex because, you know, when my partner and I, you know, are having sex and my partner finishes, that's pretty much it. And if I haven't gotten mine, but by that point, you know, it's over, you know, it's like, why is that the case? Right. Why is that the case that once the man has an orgasm that the whole thing is over? Like, it doesn't have to be that way. Right. So bringing awareness to all of these little things, that's one thing. Right. But all of these little things so that people can relate and say, hey, that's me. And I have an orgasm gap that I would like to close. And so this is important for me. And, you know, I can relate and I should tell other people about it as well, because I bet you they're having the same experience as me. And, you know, women talk to one another about their relationships and all of that. So we're always chit-chatting, you know, behind closed doors, but really putting those conversations out into the forefront so that people are made aware of the orgasm gap and what it is and why it's important to close your own individual orgasm gap. Because we should all, you know, I always say we all deserve love and we all deserve pleasure, no matter who you are. And so, you know, we should be trying to strive to close that orgasm gap for ourselves.
In terms of like dealing with the men to make them understand, like maybe, you know, the way they've been going about having sex has been one-sided, and to actually get them to understand that, you know, that it's not just over when you're over.
Yes. And, you know, exactly. Because men need the education too, right? It's not just the women, right? There's two people in the situation, right? If you're talking about heterosexual relationships, but, you know, men, most of the time, in my experience, want to pleasure their partner, you know, but if the partner is never saying anything about how to pleasure them, how could they possibly know? So it really is opening up that communication between partners so that the man can know exactly what will help their partner to, you know, get there. And that's just as important as women being empowered to want to get there as well. So, you know, both sides. And you know, I have lots of men that completely support the orgasm revolution, you know, and why wouldn't they? Why wouldn't they want their partners to be happy and to feel pleasure and to feel loved?
Well, it's going to be a more connected experience. Like if you can have the communication, and it's not so the woman is not the only person in charge of being fulfilled. Like if you include the partner, that you don't just make it her responsibility, that you talk. And if you talk, then you learn what's working, what's not working. Right. And
maybe that's
a hard conversation because people want to kind of have this like romance kind of illusion. And it's like the illusion of it is I'm not supposed to talk about it. I'm just supposed to be in it and it's supposed to magic. It's like, well, sometimes like maybe you need to actually discuss that.
Yeah. I mean, we have that magical thinking, right? We have that magical thinking. Like our partners are supposed to know our bodies and know what's going to please us. Like, why do we put all of our all of the power in the man's hands, you know, and say, okay, well, my partner should know what to do because they're the man and they should know, you know, what's going to please me, right? And instead of really giving them some guidance, you know, because not every man knows what they're doing, you know, and let's be real, right? Not if that, if there's an orgasm gap, you know, that exists, which is true, right? And many, many studies have shown that there is a real orgasm gap and this is a real phenomenon. If that's the case, then people are not having these conversations with their partners. And so opening up the lines of communication, and yes, the conversations are difficult at first. That first one is hard, you know, but guess what? The next one is a little tiny bit easier. And then the next one is a little bit easier than that. And then as you go, it becomes easier and easier to have these discussions. And then lo and behold, you're on your path to sexual liberation.
You kind of probably got to take the ego out of both sides. Like if it's too much ego, then you're not gonna get it straight. Like sometimes you have to be a little vulnerable. Right. I think that's the vulnerability. It's like, okay, well, this is your partner, but you have to, you know, express that difficult conversation. It might be a level of vulnerability, a level of honesty, a level of being authentic that like, yeah, the magic of that situation, the magical thinking, you know, that's like, well, why are we talking about something? Is this supposed to happen? But, maybe it's not just supposed to happen. Maybe you have to actually, like anything in life, you have to, there's practice. There's like, yes, you know, musician, I don't get to be really good at my bass guitar, but it's like magically thinking I can do it. I actually have to practice at it. Until it becomes muscle memory, then I know it.
And these conversations haven't done that. Exactly. Need to practice having these conversations. It's so important to practice having these conversations, just like a musician has to practice their instrument to become, you know, really good at it, right? You also have to have these conversations a lot of times to have really good communication with your partner. And a lot of times, you know, communication is only about certain things, but then they don't talk about other things that are really important, like sexuality, right? So it's really key to have those conversations.
It's like breaking down the wall, you know, There's a lot of walls that people put around, a lot of ceilings, like glass ceilings that people put on themselves, and then they don't even know they could be beyond that. You could get beyond like your kind of ordinary or mundane or not mediocre, you're not feeling good because, well, you're not really pushing the limit. Like a lot of times you have to tread water a little bit because it's uncomfortable to go into a place that's like, that's an uncomfortable situation. That's not something I'm normally dealing with, but the only way you ever make progress is when you like break some eggs. You think it's not always perfect. I find there's like that's where the magic happens, is where I don't actually know what I'm doing, right? But I start to challenge, like maybe I could learn a bit more. Maybe I could get better. If you can think of it that way with sex, I think you know, it seems like the same kind of idea.
Yes, and I've heard people coin it this way, and you know, having that curiosity, right? Curiosity to explore and to create, because it really is a very creative process and a creative time, and it's very wholesome and it's not dirty. And you know, and expressing what you want, what you need is so key. But really, you know, thinking outside of the box, it doesn't always have to be, you know, one way. And I think that, you know, we can learn a lot from the LGBTQ plus community and the kink community, right? Yeah. Because those communities have to have these conversations right early on, because it's not like, you know, a heterosexual relationship where, you know, one thing goes into the other, right?
Yeah.
So you have to have these conversations about who's going to do what, you know, what you like, what you don't like. You know, a lot of lesbians, you know, they don't like to be penetrated at all, you know. So having these conversations in the LGBTQ community is absolutely a must. And they have these conversations all the time. And in the kink community, same thing. You have to get consent for every single aspect of what you're doing. You know, do you like to be spanked? Yes or no? Do you like to be this? Do you like to be that? Do you like to be tied up? Do you like, yes, no. And then the person has to respect those boundaries. And so those communities can teach, you know, the general population a whole lot about sexuality and about communication.
Well, yeah, it's very creative. Like you're saying, Vic, if you can get beyond just doing things on like autopilot, like you, cause then you're like, you're phoning it in, and that's why it's probably not working. Like anytime you're doing something, you're phoning it in and you're just autopilot, but it's not probably going to be that exciting. It's not probably going to get you anywhere. It's like anytime you challenge yourself and you say, you know what, everything in life, there are things where maybe you need to explore. Maybe you need to, you know, have conversations, you know, have boundaries, understand your boundaries, talk about it, you know. But I think, like as we've said, there's like this magical thinking and the kind of romance thing about sex is like, oh, it's just this thing that just happens, right? Because there's like some song and you just kind of repeat the song that's like a fairy tale. It's this idealized vision of what it should be without actually knowing, you know, what it could be.
Mm-hmm.
You got it in your head, but you never talked about it. Like if you don't talk about it, how are you going to get that out of your head?
You can't. Exactly. You just continually repeat the same thing over and over. Right.
And it,
yes. And if it's not a satisfying loop, then it really sucks, you know?
Thank you. Well, I think this has been a really great conversation. I love to have conversations where we talk about boundaries. We talk about societal norms and we challenge things, and this has been a good conversation for that. And then we do have your link to Please Me Online, and is that the link to your website? And that's also your podcast, right?
So yes, my podcasts are on pleaseme.online, and you know, anywhere you listen to podcasts you can find my podcast called Please Me. You can also reach me on pleaseme.online if you're interested in treatment. And you can call me on the OWL app, and I'll send you all of the links for that and the codes and all of that stuff. But yeah, absolutely. Reach out to me and I'm happy to help you. I'm here for you for erectile dysfunction treatment, decreased vaginal sensitivity and dryness, or any other sexual health condition that you may have. That is what I treat in my practice. And right now I'm offering, can I go into this right now? Yeah, I'm offering buy 5 treatments and get 1 free. And the reason why that's significant number-wise is because that's 6 treatments, and it's what I recommend for people who want to prevent any issues that could be compounding and you don't even know about it. And if you, you know, are living in society, most likely you have some blockages that are being created that you may not even have awareness of yet, because they're not causing functional problems yet, but they will eventually. As I said, ED goes up every decade by 10%, you know, so it's a significant amount and it gets worse over time. So, you know, reach out to me for treatments as well. And please listen to my podcast.
Oh yeah. I encourage everyone to check out your podcast, Please Me. It's like everywhere the podcast can be heard, like this one, this podcast. Well, it was on YouTube and Facebook, and we mm-hmm. will be on all the podcast platforms that you can listen to or watch podcasts later today. I want to thank you for being a guest on the Family Electric Coach podcast. I appreciate it, and have a great rest of the day. And thank you again for being on the show.
Thank you so much for having me.